Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
You're in the madhouse now.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You just found the most downloaded fitness, health, and entertainment podcast. This is Mind Pump. Today's episode, we talk about six weird ways you can get yourself to lose weight that don't involve counting calories or trying to work out a ton. Pretty interesting stuff. Now, this episode is brought to you by one of our sponsors, Seed. This is the world's best, most effective probiotic. Okay, if you like probiotics, if you're interested in their benefits, improved digestion, skin health, mental health, go with Seed. They're the leaders in the industry. Everybody else is like 5 years behind. Go check them out. Go to seed.com/mindpump. Use the code 25mindpump and get 25% off your first month's order of Seed's Daily Symbiotic. Also, this month's workout program sale, MAPS Anabolic is half off, and MAPS Anabolic Advanced is also half off, both 50% off this month only. If you're interested, go to mapsfitnessproducts.com and then use the code MARCH50 for the discount. All right, here comes the show. All right, in today's episode, we're going to talk about six weird ways that you can lose weight. These are behaviors you could do that typically result in fat loss.
Doug, are you going to really let him title it that?
Why not?
Because nobody, who searches the internet and goes, that's what I want to, how I want to learn. You know, nobody's going
to,
hey,
I'm attracted to it. It says weird.
Nobody's going to listen to this episode. Like, hey, you know what? I want an unconventional way of losing weight.
You know why? It reminds me of like email spam that'll get you. Like, you know, this weird way to make money or whatever.
Yeah.
Click on it.
I mean, best for weird creative. Weird is going to turn people off.
We could come up with different titles.
Actually, weird in marketing is a pretty good word.
Oh, is it really?
Yes.
Yeah. That's a true story.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. Yeah,
Doug's really that confident, so he knows what
he's about. Saying it confidently. He's saying it confidently, but yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of a time where I was sold on like an article that said, like, try these three weird things in the bedroom.
For
sure people are clicking.
Yeah, dude. Are you joking? You just came up with a viral title.
Yeah, that actually is better than that title.
No, you know, okay, so they're weird because they're not, you know, people
conventional.
They don't think of, like, okay, first off, when it comes to losing body fat, you have to consume less calories than you take in. So all the strategies revolve around that, right? Speeding up the metabolism or doing more activity to burn more calories or just cutting calories. But really, one of the things that we encountered as trainers was it was always really challenging when you would tell clients to just eat less and move more, because it was almost like this, it would turn into this rebellion or this white knuckling. It was hard to turn into behaviors, because it was almost like, God, I got to just count these calories and I can't eat more and I got to move more type of deal. So, you know, as trainers, and I know you guys found, you know, lots of ways of getting the client to get there without feeling like they're restricting.
Well, I know before, Adam, you've made the point that it parallels a lot of parenting. And for me, it's always been like trying to get like certain nutrients for my kids to eat was always a challenge. So you'd find like recipes or different ways to disguise it, or, you know, unique deliveries to be able to kind of get them to buy into to eating it.
Well, I also think this episode speaks to the psychology of training a client.
Totally.
Right. So what we learned over decades of training people was, to your point, obviously law of thermodynamics still applies. If you eat less than you burn, you're going to lose weight. I mean, that's a fact. But what happens is people get so fixated on counting the calories and counting their whatever tool they're using to check their burn that they get fixated on that, and then they end up falling off the wagon. And then it turns into this weird relationship.
Like a stressful relationship.
Yeah, it turns into this weird relationship of it's restrictive, and then they end up wanting to rebel against this thing. And it's like, so as a coach, how can I find ways to trick my client into changing behavior, other behaviors outside of the basic counting calories and burning calories to result in that math, right? So that's really what this is about, is these are very practical, simple tactics that you can add into your life that doesn't feel restrictive. It doesn't feel like you're telling yourself you can't eat less calories and you have to move more. But what we know is it inevitably will create that calorie deficit through other means.
In other words, these are ways that lead to those behaviors without feeling restrictive or controlled, or at least a much lower risk of those things. So the first option,
adherence.
Yeah. So the first option I'll pose like this. Okay. So the first, thing we're going to say is eating without distractions. Okay. So imagine this, imagine a scenario where I take a client and I say to them, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have you eat 10% less calories a day. Let's start right there. We're going to take your calories and we're going to cut 10%. So we're going to cut whatever you're eating, 200 calories out of your diet. Or option two, I say, don't change anything about your diet. But when you eat, don't be on your phone. Don't watch TV. Don't be on your computer. Don't be reading a magazine. Just pay attention to what you're doing with your food. Eat it mindfully.
Watch everything that goes into your mouth.
Literally just be mindful while you eat. Which one of those is going to feel more restrictive, right? Which one of those feels more controlled?
Yeah, the one that's telling you can't have a certain amount of calories. But,
and now studies consistently show that mindful eating reduces your caloric intake by about 10%, both of them resulting in the same effect, behavior change, but one of them is is more likely to stick around. So it's just a good practice where you're not hyper fixated on cutting your calories. You're just like, well, my trainer said, eat whatever I want, just kind of be not distracted. Let's see what happens. And it works. It definitely works.
Yeah. I think this is purely like an awareness tool.
100%.
This was something that we used to tell our clients even before the adoption of the iPhone, right? So I was a trainer before the first iPhone came out, and I still use this tactic with like eating in front of it wasn't because I had even seen the research, because I don't think the research came out till later that you're referring to around the 10% less calories. It was just from pure observation and my own behaviors. I'd noticed that, you know, I crave certain foods when I watched movies, or if I sat in front of the television and I started to eat, I would eat more than what I normally would if I sat at a formal dinner table and just ate and was present with my family or friends that we were sitting with. And so that became just something that we would tell clients. And then later on, you see the research and the support to support the point you're making. And then you see the adoption of the cell phone, which I think just exacerbated it. It made it worse, because now you have this portable television anywhere you go. It used to be, I used to tell clients that, you know, because people would do that like around dinner time or whatever, that they would have this habit. Now we have this habit at any time we're alone, we pull this
all day long.
We pull this thing out.
Yeah. And one thing I found a lot of times too was when they would travel back and forth, and like when they stop at the gas station or they stop somewhere there's a convenience store, and then they're driving and eating at the same time, distracted, you know, all those calories we're adding in there that didn't even like account for. And you know, to be able to even just slow down and eat with intention itself is something that, you know, has a massive
benefit. You disconnect from your body signals when you're paying attention to something else. So you're going to receive the satisfaction signal later than you would if you were being mindful. And that, again, has been consistently shown to result in about 10% more. It's not a massive calorie cut, but it's a 10% across the board. Like, studies will show between 4 to 6 pounds of weight loss in 12 weeks where people are told not to change anything, just to do mindful eating.
You know, Justin, you just brought up something too that I think does fall into this category, and it's not one of the other points that we're making up, so I think we should expand on it a little bit, which is that, because it's considered still a distraction, which is the kind of just grabbing for nuts while you're doing other things.
It's all distracted eating.
Yeah, it's all distracted eating. And so what would fall in this category too, aside from avoiding being in front of the television or being in front of your phone while you're doing this, is also just eating at set meal times, right? So if you're hungry, sit down and have a full meal. Don't go grab a snack to hold you over until this next meal while you're still doing work or doing something else.
Yeah.
You know, if you're hungry, go eat, but make that a meal time, and then actually prepare a full meal, sit down without the phones, without the computers, without the other distractions, and eat your meal. Just simply keeping yourself in that and not over fixating on what is it I'm eating? How much of it am I eating? Am I weighing this? Just do that. And it's amazing how much more aware you become of what you're consuming and how that just organically reduces the total calorie intake.
Totally. All right. Next up, this one sounds not connected, but it is a compelling connection, which is you want to lose weight, get better sleep. And I know people might be listening to me. What do you mean move less? No, it strongly affects behaviors. In fact, I pulled up a meta-analysis of 20 studies. One of them included 300,000 people, and it found a 41% increased obesity risk among adults who slept fewer than 7 hours a night. In other words, people who got less than ideal sleep had a 41% increased risk of obesity. It changes your behaviors. It changes your cravings. Mm-hmm. It makes you eat. If you sleep well, you're less likely to numb yourself or to reach for food to feel better. You're less likely to overeat.
This is something that took me a while to make this connection. But this connection is so strong that I can't recall the last time that I felt a strong craving for a type of a food, and I didn't also have poor sleep the night before. Yeah. Almost always when I have this, and it took me a while to make that connection, go like, oh, I'm having this weird craving, and then think, oh, how did I sleep? Oh, shit. It was one of those. And why this is so important to make this connection, if this is you, because I feel like this is a lot of people, is when you know that you had the poor night's sleep and you know that you're probably going to have a craving ahead of time, it's easier to fight that too. So aside from, okay, I'm going to prioritize my sleep this night, so I do it. Even if there for some reason my sleep got disrupted, I know to be on guard. Today is going to be a day I'm going to be craving. And just knowing that is a powerful
tool. Get
ahead
of it, yeah.
Knowing that because I didn't get good sleep, there's going to come a time today where I'm going to want something weird like Jack in the Box tacos. I haven't thought about that since I was 22 years old. Seriously though, if I have these weird, odd cravings for junk type foods, it's always been correlated with a bad night of sleep.
There's a lot of reasons why this makes a big difference. One of them is optimal sleep is more likely to produce a hormone profile that's healthy. Hormones definitely play a role in how you store body fat or how much body fat you store. It also, of course, they play a role in driving behaviors and cravings. It changes catecholamine production. Sleep can affect serotonin and dopamine. And so studies across the board show that people crave hyperpalatable foods when their sleep isn't as good versus when it is really good. In other words, they're seeking something that makes them feel better. Now, evolutionarily speaking, this also makes sense because stress for most of human history really boiled down to one thing, danger or lack of food. And so if you're not getting sleep, that stress on the body, your body's probably like, you're having a tough time finding food. Let's ramp up these hunger signals and give you the drive to keep searching to eat more food. And when you find it, you're going to eat more of it because maybe there's not enough to be around. So this one right here, like when I look at the data on this and I'm working with someone who wants to lose a lot of weight, I know the behaviors around changing their diet are really hard. Changing behaviors to improve sleep are easier, but they will result in better eating habits. So this is a really good one to tackle.
We're talking about eating habits right now and how this is in control making better food choices. But this also plays a huge role, too, in your likelihood to go to the gym and work out, too.
Of course. Yeah.
Like when I get a good night's rest and I get up out of bed and I feel refreshed and ready to start my day.
You're going to perform way better.
I'm going to be more productive at work. I'm more likely to just move neat more because of that. And then I'm more likely to show up for my workout that day, too. So it has this other compounding effect outside of just hormonally and nutritionally the choices that you make. It also makes a difference in, I think, your total neat for the day and movement and productivity, and then also your likelihood that you're going to go to the gym and have a good workout.
Right. Speaking of neat or movement, the next one is to walk after meals. It doesn't have to be a lot. It'd be 5 to 10 minutes. You can literally eat and then walk around your office or go outside and walk around the block. Now, why does this make a difference? Well, it's extra activity. So if you do 10 minutes of walking 3 times a day, it's 30 minutes of walking you weren't doing before, but that's not really the major impact. The major impact is how it affects your blood sugar. When you eat food, your blood sugar goes up, and contracting and relaxing muscles really sends a signal to suck up those carbohydrates, that glycogen. and you see these great effects on blood sugar levels. Mm-hmm. That affects your behaviors. Rises and drops in blood sugar make you want to eat more food. They make you not feel so good or feel anxious. So walking after meal, by the way, walking after meals also improves digestion.
Yes.
Which also affects your
big time. Behaviors. I mean, if you're, you know, you're getting your blood flow, like you're getting movement, your food needs to move. It needs to travel. It needs to get to the
you're right. Upright also.
Digestive yeah. process. Yeah. I mean, yes, you can rely on gravity, but like to be able to add that bit of movement, so you do get contraction, you do get like some help there with your tissues to kind of help move everything along. And then you're more likely to also get better sleep, which is something yeah. that I found, especially for like dinner and to walk after a dinner was enormously helpful because one of the biggest problems I'd have, I'd go then lay down and, you know, and then my food didn't properly digest and then that would wake me up in the middle of the night.
This, to me, this has also been, if you've listened to the show long enough, you've heard me talk about this as a relationship hack too. I found this is just a great time for my wife and I to connect to. It just became a ritual for us. Like after we ate, we would just go for these nice walks. Mm-hmm. And it started and stemmed from us actually going out to eat because we used to go to our favorite place over in Campbell downtown. It has this real nice area to walk downtown. And we wouldn't just eat and then get back in the car. We always like to stroll up and down it. And like we just started to connect the benefits of that, like just mm-hmm. how we felt after having this big old sushi dinner or whatever, just simply walking for 15 to 20 minutes afterwards, how much better we felt afterwards. And it just became – and then we also noticed too, like we're connecting. We don't have our phones on us. It's just her and I. It isolated this time where we could have this one-on-one conversation. It created better digestion. We felt better. We're burning more – it just ended up being this thing. It's like, wow, that's such a small thing that we can add into our life. And we talk so much on the show. I know today we're talking about, you know, calories and how that helps with weight loss, but like the whole health sphere is also relationship and parent and all of the other things we talk about. And so anytime I can find a hack that is going to serve me with my fitness goals on maybe my aesthetic goals and how my weight goals or whatever, and then also my relationship goals or other things that are related to health.
That's gold.
To me, that's real gold.
Totally. And you know, to the digestion point, you know, you have hip flexor muscles that literally run through the digestive system.
Yeah.
And you contract and move them. They do help massage and move things down. And then lastly, this is an activity behavior that is more likely to stick than other activity behaviors. What I mean by that is if you're trying to actively add activity to your life, one of the most effective ways to do it is to connect activity to something you already do. So you already eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. If you add a short walk, a 7-minute walk after breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you're going to effectively add 21 minutes of walking to your day, and it's more likely to stick around than if you were to block off 21 minutes at any other time of the day.
Yeah, that's called habit stacking.
Yeah.
And there's research to prove the success rate of habit stacking versus trying to create something completely different. Like if you all of a sudden decide that I'm going to go on this weight loss journey, part of that weight loss journey, I'm going to add an hour of cardio every single day, and you now have to show up to the gym at a different time than you've mm-hmm. ever been there before or stay there later or it disrupt your day and do that versus, hey, after every meal, I'm going to take a 15 to 20 minute walk. Meals are already something that you've established as a ritual already in your life and is already a habit. By adding that habit to that habit, you're way more likely to stick to it, which that's so important to this whole game of staying healthy and fit forever is adherence. And so you have to ask yourself, like, which is what we learn to do as coaches is, you know, if you ask a client, like, can you do this? That's the first question. Yes, I can do it. Two, do you see yourself doing this forever? And if their client goes, no, I don't see myself getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning and going for an hour cardio session every single day of my life forever. I can't. I just want to do it to get in shape. Well, then we're not going to do that now because, yeah, I might be able to use that tool to get you there. But if you cannot see yourself doing that forever, then what is the point of me having you do that? You're only going to end up putting the weight back on.
100%.
We're far better off finding ways that we can insert it into your habits already and habit stack, and then you're more likely to keep it going forever.
Yeah. This next one is somewhat similar to the first one, and it's to eat without drinking fluids. This does increase the mindfulness around food, but really what it does is you chew a lot more and you slow way down. Now, I had a really bad habit for years with food, especially because I trained lots of clients back to back. I would train 8 clients or 10 clients in a row in my studio, And I'd finish one, and 2 minutes later or 5 minutes later, another client would show up. And in between those, I would have to eat. And so I had a little mini kitchenette in the back of my studio, and I'd go back there, and I'm eating a full meal in 5 minutes. And so it's like bottle of water, food. It's like, you know, chomp, chomp, swallow, chomp, chomp. It's like I was taking supplements. I wasn't even eating the food. And I didn't realize what a negative effect it had on my digestion. I also, when I stopped doing that, and I didn't stop doing it for any of these reasons, I stopped doing it for digestive reasons, I noticed I didn't want to eat nearly as much because I chewed the food, broke it down. By the way, that's the very first part of digestion is being able to break it all down. If you can't swallow it without washing it down, you need to chew on it.
You have to chew a lot more.
Yeah.
I had the same problem. I would like take huge bites and always had to have something to wash it down. If I didn't have something to wash it down, I would choke. And this was just like a normal thing for me. I'd choke, like, oh, I need something to wash it down, thinking whatever, that was normal. And of course you guys probably think that's, that makes sense. But, I didn't think anything of it until finally, like, I forget like when it finally hit me, I was like, man, I need to like slow down, take my time. And now it takes me forever to eat, but like I'm getting better, but just taking that extra amount of time to just chew it down to the fine amount has been so much better for everything to process, in my digestion.
Did you pick up this habit for the same reasons I did where you're trying to go fast?
It was a speed thing. Yeah. I think it was too, like, you know, you grew up with siblings. Paul Chick definitely talks about this.
Yes,
I just say, I think I could have sworn that we talked about more, started talking about this more often after we talked to Paul Chick. And, you know, since we're talking about this, I've been meaning to look this up for the longest time. Maybe Doug can look this up for me. In the 90s, I believe it was the 90s, there was a popular diet that all it was that you had to chew your food a certain amount of times before you swallowed it. I want to say it was like the, 50 chews or something. It was like, chew your food 50 times, diet. Look for something.
And the whole reason behind it, I know exactly what you're talking about, is because the data shows very clearly if people chew their food well and don't wash it down with fluids, they lose weight. Yeah. They eat less because of it.
And well, you know, it's interesting too, is like eating foods that require your jaw strength and using the masseter and like it actually, like, it's interesting. And this is where these dumb products come out where you're like just chewing a piece of rubber to try and build, a more chiseled looking face and jawline. But like it affects your teeth and orthodontics and like there's a whole cascade of effects when you don't like really challenge the way that you consume food and chew enough.
This is also another, we talk about habit stacking. So this is another one that is so great to pair with the not being distracted, right? If you're not on your phone, you're not on this, and you're like really present with your food, you can actually sit here and set. And so that's what I would do, is I would set a goal of counting. It's either 30 something or 50 something. I can't remember what the number was.
100%. There's a book on it.
Yes, there was.
And the title was how many times you.
It was such a silly. I remember as a young trainer thinking this is.
We just dismissed it.
Oh, I totally dismissed it as the stupidest thing ever.
100%.
And now I totally recognize the benefits of that. Now that, because I've actually done this before, I'm like, hey, I'm not gonna have any fluids and have this dinner. And let me tell you, having a steak rice dinner with no fluids to wash down is different. It's different. And you gotta really take your time and chew on every bite before you can swallow that appropriately. And you just don't eat as much doing that. Forget the fact too, you're probably burning more calories because you're actually working and chewing more. But in addition to that, you just don't eat as much.
And I'm bringing it up. I'm trying to look it up myself, and it's all saying something like 30 times or chew your food more than 30 times.
Yeah,
and I believe that this is an Ayurvedic practice as well. I think Ayurvedic medicine teaches.
I knew it was like 30 to 50.
32 times is the number I'm seeing.
Okay.
There's this guy named Fletcher. Was back at the turn of the 20th century, and he encouraged everybody to chew their food until it became liquefied, essentially. It was called Fletcherism.
Well, if you think of this again, I like to go evolutionary, right? If you think of this, like, you're out, you kill an animal, you're going to eat it. Like, you might not have tons of water around you.
No matter what.
And you're eating meat, like, you're going to chew the hell out of it, because guess what happens if you choke? You're dead, right? You're done. So they probably chewed the hell out of food.
And the amount of water the back then was not like water was so sacred and scarce that it's like it's not like you would allow someone to pound. Yeah, you probably had like a little canister for the 12 of you. You know what I'm saying? And so like you get a sip of water if anything.
You know, by the way, this is why they say that modern humans often get their wisdom teeth pulled out because we do so little chewing.
Yeah.
Ever since we're babies. That our jaws don't grow big enough to support
they small
wisdom teeth. Because it does affect your palate and all that stuff. But this one results in weight loss for many, many people. It's a simple, stupid, it's definitely weird, Adam. Yeah. Next up is food order. Food order meaning, hey, don't change your diet, but when you make your plate, eat your food in this order. And it goes like this. Eat your protein first, eat your fibers next, and then eat your carbohydrates. Now, why would this make a difference, whether I eat protein first or last or whatever? Here's why. Protein and fiber are the most satiety-producing of all the macronutrients and components in food. In other words, if you eat your protein and fiber first, you're less likely to overeat. Or to put it differently, you're more likely to eat less calories simply by doing that.
This is one of my favorite because almost every client I ever trained had a chip or bread addiction. And that was almost inevitable that they, at one point in our training time, they would ask like, yeah, but Adam, I love bread or I love chips. And my favorite thing to do back to them is be like, I'm not telling you can't have it, but we just got to make sure we go get your protein first. So that's all I want you to do. So I know the bread's going to come to the table. I know the bread's going to come to the table first and the chips are going to come to the table. And I'm not telling you, you can't have that bread that you love. All I'm saying is I need you to go get me my 40 grams of protein in that meal first and then have whatever vegetables there. So your salad, your green beans or asparagus or whatever it is. And then go have your bread. So, but just get that for me first. And they'd be like, really? I can have my bread? Yes. As long as you go get that 40 grams of protein in that meal first for me. And then you do that, then you absolutely can enjoy the bread. And they report back this, I ended up getting to that point. I'm like, I didn't even care. I didn't even want it. Or I could barely finish.
Bites.
Yeah. I could barely finish the vegetables after eating the protein. And then they're like, I wasn't even hungry anymore.
You know what happens is that when people do the opposite, if they do end up leaving anything on their plate, it ends up being the protein.
Oh, I'm guilty of this. Yeah. I'm guilty of, this is why too, we go to we've done this before together. We go to a really fancy steakhouse. It's one of our favorite things to do when we travel is find like the best steakhouse in the area and order appetizers. And it's like,
then your steak comes.
Yeah. And then my, $200 steak comes. I can't finish it. Like nothing. I want to punch myself in the face when that happens. Yeah. And so, that if you do that, your clients are guilty of the exact same thing.
Right. And then when they do studies on diets, same calorie diets, one high protein, one normal protein, the high protein diet results in more fat loss and more muscle gain. So everything controlled, just the protein. Protein encourages muscle growth when you strength training more than carbs and fats. It also crushes your appetite in comparison to carbs and fats. Fiber is actually close to protein, but it's second. And it makes you eat less, makes you burn more body fat, makes you build more muscle. So you just eat in this order. And again, it's one of those things where you're not telling yourself or no one's telling you to eat less. It's like, look, whatever you eat, keep eating. Just change the order of it and then watch what happens. And it typically results in some slow fat loss. In fact, this became my very first piece of advice to clients towards the end of my career. I didn't do anything else with diet. Typically, I wouldn't even touch diet until we started strength training. But after a certain point, when we got to diet, I would say exactly that. We're not going to change anything. Eat in this order. And everybody would get this like nice gradual fat loss from it.
Well, and keep in mind too, all these things that we're talking about, they show positive benefits independently.
That's right.
So if you actually take all this advice and just go like, listen,
we just wrote a diet
book. I'm not gonna weigh my food. Yep. I'm not gonna count a bunch of calories. The only thing that requires some sort of tracking here is protein, right? So we're saying like, make sure you hit that food order, and I'd want you to hit your protein intake every day. Other than that, if you stacked all these things, you would see this is what I would consider the closest thing to taking a client who really does not want to get into the weighing, tracking, measuring game, and they want to eat as close to it as intuitive as they can. This is how we would introduce someone to the intuitive type of eating.
Speaking of that, the last one is to journal, is to just keep a journal where you write before and after you eat one or two sentences about how you feel. And there's nothing magical about what you write or the fact that you're necessarily writing, but what it does do is it puts you in that executive part of your brain. Whenever you think on paper, you're taking your thoughts, you're moving to the frontal lobe. The executive part of the brain is the part of the brain that thinks things out and is not impulsive. The other parts of the brain can be quite impulsive. And oftentimes, poor eating habits are actually pretty impulsive. And so what they find in studies, and again, this falls under that mindfulness category, when people start journaling and they're told to change nothing else, it typically starts to result in some fat loss simply because they took a minute to write down how they felt, which made them think about how they felt. And now there's some awareness.
So you've given this advice quite a few times, and I've done this with clients, and I have a little bit more like specific what I want. Right. And I've found, and why is because there's research to show that people just tracking food, not saying they can or can, just tracking their food, they eat a certain percentage less also. Mm-hmm. So when I tell them the journal, this is all I tell them, because a lot of times they're like, well, what do I write? Or what am I supposed to, I don't get it. What am I supposed to be thinking or feeling? It's like, Lizzie, all I want you to do is write down what you ate and how you felt. That's it.
Yeah.
Every meal when you sit down, write what it was that you ate, mm-hmm, and write how you felt. And just you becoming aware of what you're eating, there's plenty of research to support that tracking what you're eating will result in you eating less food, and then you attach that, yep, to how you're feeling afterwards, and you start to connect the dots of like,
yeah, you build associations.
Yes. Hey, I ate that ice cream. So one, you're already having to write and track that, so that, and then you sort of go like, oh God, I actually felt like shit afterwards. Like it was, yeah, good going down, but didn't feel good afterwards. And then you start to learn to connect the dots to these, when you eat outside of what you know is ideal for you, how you truly feel about it. And it's easier to resist in the future.
Well, I think, yeah, and another sort of benefit to journaling that I'll also like, it could be towards other things in your life, but really what it does is it helps to get it out of your mind and into the tangible world. So it's like, this is a real thing. And it's not, a lot of times we can trick ourselves, especially with nutrition.
Totally.
And just say, well, I am eating good and I am doing this and, yeah, I am like, and you just, you know, sort of repeat this, you gaslight yourself in a sense. Yeah. And to be able to write it down and then you can refer to it and it's like, this is real. This is what's happening. I'm present. It just helps you to stay like consciously focused on it.
Well, that's such a good point you're making right now too, because again, lots of research to support this, that the average person is what they report, under report by like 20 or 30% or something, mm-hmm, like that. Like, mm-hmm, so you, most people totally underestimate how they eat anyways. So simply documenting that brings it into reality. And it's no longer this thing that they've been gaslighting themselves, to your point.
100%. By the way, gaslighting is not real. All right. If you want to burn body fat, go to mindpumpfree.com. We have a fat loss guide. It's free. Mindpumpfree.com. You can also find us on Instagram. Justin is at Mind Pump Justin. I'm at Mind Pump DeStefano. Adam is at Mind Pump Adam.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic. 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now, plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.